Hi, everyone, and welcome to my show called We Were Lied To About 9/11. I am your host, John Gold, and this show is part of the Soapbox People's Network. This week, we will again address the issue of the corporate news and how it affects us, as well as other issues.
Hi, this is John, and I'm here with Peter Phillips. Hi, Peter. How are you doing today?
Hey, John. Hey, thanks for having me on here.
Oh, thank you very much for taking the time today to be on. All right, so I'm going to read your bio for everybody. Peter Phillips is a professor of political sociology at Sonoma State University and president of Media Freedom Foundation, Project Censored. He was director of Project Censored from 1997 to 2010. Phillips holds a PhD from University of California, Davis. His dissertation was on the sociology of the San Francisco Bohemia Club. His recent research is focused on the transnational capitalist class, or TCC, and U.S. NATO empire's move to 21st century fascism. Before we get started, I just want to say that I had Mickey Huff on for episode 2 to discuss how the corporate news has treated advocacy for 9/11 justice, and 27 episodes later, I still hate the corporate news. Bob McElvain and I have breakfast every week, and we talk about different things, and we always end up saying, you know, if the corporate news did its job, et cetera, and so on. So this is still a major problem in this country, and it gets worse all the time. And I also want to thank Mickey Huff for helping to arrange this interview. So you ready to get started?
Yeah, sure. That's great.
All righty. What was the day of 9/11 like for you?
Well, we didn't have a television. We lived out in on a ranch near Sonoma State here, and so we went over to a neighbor's just to see what was happening because my wife got a call from a friend of hers in New York, and so it was firsthand terrible things happening. We went over. Saw what was happening on television and the collapse, and then I went to the university that day, but we all were basically over at the Commons looking at a big screen TV in terms of coverage, somewhat in shock, like, oh my God, what's going on? And then the university closed. They just said that the president decided that because of the national tragedy, we were going to close the university, so we went home. I followed it fairly closely, you know. I think that night or the next day, Michael Parenti was on KPFA, and he was using the terminologies of the, you know, blowback and the chickens come home to roost kind of approach. And I started thinking about that in that context. But it was a few months before we really started to get information that contradicted the stories that the corporate media was saying.
It's interesting that you say that. I was just talking to Mickey today about, you know, it was different on 9/11 for people who have been following the exploits of our government for years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Dr. Parenti suggesting blowback, and I would have never thought of that back then. You know, it wasn't until years later that I came to different, or I had a different viewpoint. Anyway, so what was the first?
Even that viewpoint was, you know, that supposed terrorists, would have a reason for wanting to attack us, and that was always suspicious, you know. And Bush said, though, they hate our freedoms, and you know, that sort of thing. That to me just didn't make sense. And
right. And what I generally say is, well, they took away all our freedoms, so the terrorists have nothing to hate us for anymore.
Right, something like that. Yeah, that's certainly been a result of that day. But it didn't take long for some suspicion of how that happened or was facilitated beyond Osama bin Laden. That's the way they were laying it out to enter my mind and many people around me.
So what was the first thing that you questioned about 9/11?
I think that Osama bin Laden was behind it, was one of the first things. He was denying it. I knew about planned invasions of Afghanistan, which we had seen in earlier, and then we started to really take a look at some of the problems, the failure of the airplanes to be intercepted, failure of the U.S. Air Force that day, and in particular, and then the stock options information came out. That came out pretty quickly. And how that was kind of covered up and just ignored. And then we heard about ISI and how money had gone to, to support activities here. So there was a lot of different things in that year that came out, the jet scrambling, the Carlyle Group and connection to Bush, the planned invasion of Afghanistan, the insider stock tradings, the U.S. government, the pre-warnings that a number of countries had given to us that something was pending. So as Project Censored, we were seeing these stories from a variety of independent sources. And we're going, oh, my God, what are we going to do here in terms of our annual listing of stories, which was we always had the top 25 most important news stories not covered by the corporate media. And there was a lot of pressure, even here at our university, to avoid trying to say conspiracies or things of that nature. So we decided, so there were so many stories that we thought were legitimate stories that we just went ahead and put a chapter in our book on 9/11 that listed all of these things and cited the sources for them as an overall statement about 9/11. And that's how we dealt with that. Because if we'd really gone through our normal process, most of the stories that year would have been 9/11 related, it would seem like.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so it was kind of a question, and a lot of us, I think, were very concerned that the U.S. certainly ignored the warnings, and then we started to recognize the possibilities that there was some facilitation that occurred inside the U.S. military industrial complex, which could be private companies as well as public. So that with the information, then the suppression of that. Any questions that questioned 9/11 were overtly challenged, and the corporate media wouldn't even go there. They wouldn't even point out anything. Most of these had been covered. The stock options stuff was covered, but then there's no follow up. So we thought that was pretty interesting. And so we had several students working on those stories and then published in our Censored 2003 book, which was a year later. It actually came out in September of 2002. So a year later, we had put together quite a significant amount of information on 9/11, the beginnings of that, and the questioning of the government's facts on it.
And the stories that you mentioned, it's not like they were being reported on by conspiracy theory websites. These were, what were considered corporate news, mainstream media news outlets. And they weren't getting the coverage. You're right, they were suppressing the information. Journalists, for a number of reasons, were not questioning things like they should have been doing.
Mm-hmm.
And we found later, I'm sure you're familiar with Robert Scheer.
Uh-huh.
He wrote an article for the LA Times called "What We Don't Know About 9/11 Hurts Us." And, not long after that, he was let go from the LA Times. And
right.
We saw a number of instances where journalists would, just shy away from it. And I've heard from Abby that journalists just won't touch it.
There seems to be, there's kind of a strong resistance inside of corporate media to cover anything that would be looked at suspiciously as as implying some sort of a conspiracy.
Right.
And that gets doubly manifested on the left, particularly because some of the early engagers in 9/11 questioning were extreme right-wingers. And
right.
It became an issue on both the left and the right. And a number of people, paleoconservatives and even Rupert, were not left-leaning progressives. And
right.
That raised the hackles on people like Norman Solomon and Fair and some of the other liberal left liberals in New York City environment, media environment. And they, of course, for years had been hassled by right-wing 9/11 folks for being what they're called gatekeepers and be called names. So they've got very
right.
tough skins around that, and they won't even go anywhere near it. And it's caused some, I think, blindsidedness on not being able to look at very scientific and legitimate things like the stuff Richard Gage is engaged in. And of course, Stephen Jones, when he initially came out with his questioning on the collapse of Building 7.
Well, I think the buildings have gotten more attention than they should have for a number of reasons, but I wholeheartedly support the questions of how those buildings came down. I know many family members still have questions about how those buildings came down, but I think there has been a little bit of overemphasis on those buildings. And
well,
we
yeah.
could have been focusing on simpler things, I think. And my belief is that you shouldn't have to be a scientist or an architect or an engineer to understand the need for 9/11 justice, for truth, accountability, and justice. So that's the route that I've taken.
Certainly,
sorry, go ahead.
9/11 was used to justify a permanent war
yep.
on terrorism. And that was, of course, a manifestation and extension of what the neoconservatives really wanted, and has continued to this day to expand global war and chaos everywhere. So that's the biggest problem and the biggest criticism at this point. And which is why I've moved in the direction of researching, you know, transnational corporate class and power.
Well, what I said earlier about how the media suppresses information, while covering 9/11 information. They occasionally do cover a story, but they don't give it the attention that Britney Spears gets, or, you know, Shaquille O'Neal supposedly just posted something on his website about 9/11 that was absolutely ridiculous. I don't know that if it was him or not, but it got so much media attention, the Shaquille O'Neal is a 9/11 truther. And, you know, they'll cover Saudi Arabia to an extent, but all the other stuff they just ignore, especially the families like the September 11th advocates who have written letter after letter, press release after press release over the years, and have been almost completely ignored. And in fact, during the time of the 9/11 Commission, the 9/11 Family Steering Committee released press release after press release calling into question different aspects of the 9/11 Commission during the time of the 9/11 Commission. If any of those statements had gotten the attention they deserved, you know, this might be a different world today. But anyway.
You're completely correct in that regard. I mean, corporate media today and for decades now is nothing more than a propaganda machine for the State Department, the Pentagon, and American capitalism at the highest levels.
It's so funny that you say that, because one of the very first quotes that I remember from you is, I think you said something to the effect that if you rely on your corporate, on the television for your news, then you don't have a damn idea of what's going on, or something to that effect.
Yeah, it's the Neil Postman thing, best entertained, least informed.
Well, it's funny because at the time, at the time you had said that, I was still, you know, maybe the TV tells the truth, maybe it doesn't. But I've learned over the years that the TV is horrible and you shouldn't watch it. But anyway.
Right. I mean, I didn't have a TV for 25 years, and we do have cable, and my wife likes to watch it, and I'll watch movies and stuff, but I don't watch television news per se.
Oh, the television shows, I'll watch, but I won't watch it on a TV. I don't have a TV, except for video games and DVDs to play, but... When Project Censor did address the 9/11 issue, and we're skipping over a question, but we'll get back to that one, what did some of Project Censor's supporters do when you decided to cover 9/11?
Well, there were some raised eyebrows, but nobody did anything really seriously. After when our 2003 book came out, and all these factual stories about various 9/11, there wasn't any meta-analysis in saying that... you know, these are things that we really need to figure out. I mean, what's going on? If you read them all together collectively, you have to come to some understanding that, hey, maybe there's more behind this than what's being presented. And that I think was understood, and a number of people, our national judges in that, were pretty clear. They go, yeah, this is concerning. We didn't get any... formal pushback, even here at the university, until we sponsored Stephen Jones to come and speak here, which would have been in 2004-5, right in there. And he came and gave a full scientific presentation on Building 7, and it was very well done, and we invited the science community here at the university to attend, and only one did. But the head of the physics department got a hold of another professor who was very concerned about us, about Project Censored here and 9/11, and they pushed the local newspaper to criticize Stephen Jones. The front page headline was, "Discredited Scholar Speaks at Sonoma State." And then she is the chair of the physics department said that his information was incorrect. She didn't even attend. I mean, she didn't even bother to come and hear his presentation. So that was a little raw. But going into that, we had invited Stephen Jones, and Norman Solomon was on our board at the time, our national judges board. And he called me up and he goes, you're going to have Stephen Jones come and speak. You know, this was a release of our annual stories. And I said, yeah, I think he's going to give a presentation. And he says, well, I don't think you should have him. I go, well, you know, we've already invited him. He's going to come. It looks pretty scientific and factual. He said, well, at least make it a debate. And I said, Norman, I can't do that. I mean, it's 2 weeks from the event. I can't call him up now and say, oh, you got to make this a debate. We're not going to let you come and present. And then he demanded the email addresses for all our judges, our national judges. I think there was like 18 or 20 at the time. And I sent them to him. And so he sent an email out saying he was resigning from the Project Censored national judges and encouraged everyone else to do it. Well, one other judge did, Robert Jensen, and everybody else stayed. Which was, you know, a statement to us that there are certainly people that can look at this objectively and say, well, wait a minute, you know, we have to look at the facts as difficult as they may be or as scary as they may be. And that's the time we started calling these threshold concepts. In other words, there's things that are so scary that you don't want to go into that dark closet and open the door and cross the threshold. Right. From that, that was certainly an interesting factor. I mean, Norman, a couple, 3 years later, decided he was going to run for Congress in our district here. And he knew that he'd really ticked me off when he did that resignation. So he invited me to lunch, and we got together. He told me he was going to run for Congress. And he said that in regards to the 9/11 issue, he would be happy to encourage further investigation. Because apparently, whenever he went and talked, there were 9/11 people that were in his face. I think he was getting kind of tired of it. But my understanding, he's also had led a let's not talk about this effort at KPFA on Pacifica to discourage coverage of 9/11 or anything that would imply that there was it wasn't the way that the 9/11 Commission reported it. So that was too bad, I didn't criticize Norman when he ran for Congress, but I didn't get behind him either. So it was kind of, that's just what happened.
Well, this is a very scary issue to confront, I think, for a lot of people. It is for me, certainly. You know, they say the government's supposed to fear the people, not the other way around. But I think as a people, we need to address it, regardless of how scary it is. Because if we don't address it, you know, look at the direction this country is going in,
right,
since that day.
Yeah.
And
I think it was at the Cynthia McKinney hearings where I was in Washington, and I helped organize the press conference that day at the National Press Club. And the place was packed. There just wasn't any corporate media there. David Ray Griffin spoke, and there were a number of other people, but there was media from all over the world, but nobody from corporate media came, which was telling in itself, because they just can't, they won't. Their job is on the line.
I believe the coverage that, the corporate news coverage that the 9/11 congressional briefing got, which is what you're talking about,
mm-hmm.
I think it came from the Weekly Standard in attack form, and then was put on CBS News. If memory serves, I think that's what happened. The only coverage it got, essentially. Here come the march of the conspiracy theorists.
Right, right, right.
Something to that effect.
Yeah.
But there's
a maturation that kind of comes with this. I mean, once you know all these stories, and there's further investigation, and we know about the hijackers missing, and there's some good movies out, I think. You know, I think there's several that I think are really, really solid. And but then you kind of reach a point. Well, okay, we've covered all this. This is where we are. Now, where are we going? And so I think, you know, 5 years, 6 years into it, I'm starting to think, well, now we're in major wars. We have a U.S. NATO global empire maturing. Well, what's this all about, and where are we going in the future here? And so even if we convicted Cheney of being involved, not saying that he was in fact, but he probably had some awareness of what was going down, or something like that, it wouldn't change where we are today in terms of global empire. So I think our energies just simply focusing on 9/11 as if it's going to save us, if we somehow can expose what really happened, and we can just get everybody to believe it, it is not valid strategy. I'm perfectly happy to have everybody investigated as deeply as possible and continue to do research and expand it. But I think
what I've told. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
But I think we need to move. Also, be thinking about a strategy of where we are today, what 9/11 has brought us, and the continuation of false flag events and the empire building that we now are faced here.
What I try to tell progressives, and I'm talking about people like Amy Goodman or Glenn Greenwald or Chris Hedges or any of those people that generally don't talk about 9/11,
right,
when they talk about everything else under the sun, but they won't talk about the lies of 9/11. And all I'm trying to get them to do is to acknowledge the fact that we were lied to about 9/11, to look at this post 9/11 world through that lens,
right,
and accept, you know, when the corporate news doesn't do its job, it's up to those with a voice to inform the public about what's going on. And there are many people, you know, with a voice that just aren't addressing the issue. And I have covered
so many different topics over the years. Israel and Gaza and, you know, Russia and Ukraine and the wiretapping and the torture and everything that came about from 9/11. I've been covering all of that. But I've also been covering the fact that we were lied to about that day. And I can't honestly think of a faster way to end what's considered to be the post 9/11 world than by proclaiming that we were lied to about that day and thereby taking away the justification for all of it. If we could do that as a country, I think that would be a powerful statement to the world and to this country. But, you know, I don't know that that's going to happen.
I think people already accept that. Or they certainly think that they weren't told the whole truth. Literally half the people in the country accept that.
Well, most polls over the years have shown that a majority of the people question what we were told about 9/11. It's a question of whether or not they're going to do something about it. And if you're not going to make 9/11...
That's the question. Can we do something about it?
And if you're not going to make... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, 9/11, of course, is a big media cover-up, but so is election fraud. I mean, the fact that George W. Bush never won a U.S. election for president.
Right.
And they both elections were fraudulent. No corporate media wants to cover that story either, and there's plenty of evidence to show that there was voter manipulation and not only cheating in terms of who could vote, but, you know, election fraud in the sense of voting machines being manipulated.
Well, that brings me to a good question. What are some of the biggest stories the corporate news has essentially ignored over the years?
My general answer to that is class and power and the degree to which the power elite dominate the country, dominate the world today in a much broader sense. That's the macro. Now, inside that, there's certainly a failure to cover 9/11, failure to cover the Kennedy assassination adequately, you know, or various other things that are labeled conspiracies, which was the CIA, which they did after the Kennedy administration, was to put that out as a conspiracy theorist. So you call them that when they question us. And the negation of that term has come to, particularly in terms of corporate media and how they use it. So anybody they don't like, they'll call them a conspiracy theorist and dismiss them and then point out the silliest aspect of some theory and then try to relate that to that person. That's clearly a problem. The election fraud was a big problem. The war on terrorism is another big problem. Certainly the idea, we've been lied to about Osama bin Laden forever. And the refusal to identify what we're saying are the terrorists, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and our involvement, U.S. involvement, and other agency involvements in terms of making those groups happen. Funding
right.
Initially.
That's a big one.
Those are big lies, very big lies. Environmental destruction is a huge lie or lack of coverage in terms of blaming who what's really going on and who's involved. And so, you know, we're really only talking about 6,000 or 7,000 people who were part of the 0.001% that control $100 trillion worth of wealth.
Right.
Those people have that kind of control over literally half the wealth of the world. And there's only, you know, a few thousand of them. We need to identify who they are and focus on making them change and exposing them and pulling their covers back on these power elites in the world. That, I think, is an agenda that really, and from that, 9/11 emerges, voter fraud emerges, environmental action emerges, and we can have all kinds of adjustments to the wrongs that we've seen.
I think this goes back to what Mario Savio said about putting our bodies on the gears of the machine.
Yeah.
Like we see in so many other countries, and yet, you know, it almost happened with Occupy, and then it faltered. But
it didn't falter.
And for a number of reasons.
But it didn't falter. I mean, social movements can emerge, they can explode, they can be repressed, but they leave a consciousness that's changed.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
You know,
my goodness, the one thing that I think the 9/11 Truth Movement or advocates for 9/11 justice have done over the years has gotten people to question what they're being told by their government. I think that's a success of ours. I think some people take it to the extreme and say that everything is a conspiracy. But I do think that we have successfully gotten people to question what they're being told.
Right.
At the very least.
And the mantra, the 99 versus 1%.
Right.
And
exactly.
It doesn't even matter. I mean, if you take the 1% of 7-8 billion people, you know, that's a huge number. To be in that number, you only have to have like $700,000 worth of wealth. It's
wow.
The difference between somebody with $700,000 worth of wealth and someone who's controlling $100 billion.
Right.
That's
exactly.
That is the most immense.
Well,
you know,
go ahead.
So, you know, if you own a home and it's worth $700,000, that difference between you and somebody who's making minimum wage isn't that different massively, maybe in terms of lifestyle, than it is between the power that the multi-billionaires have. Between
right.
That 1,000th of 1%, those 6,000.
That's
exactly. Who's controlling the world. That's where, and they're the ones making the decision of how capital is used, how the hundreds of trillion dollars is being invested and where it's spent. And that's who NATO and the U.S. military empire is protecting, is that capital. And they will do literally anything, include having false flag activities like 9/11 to create permanent war that uses up capital and increases wealth even more globally and concentrates it even more. That's what war does.
Yep. And war is a racket. I saw the other day there was a headline that Israel said their war with Gaza is a moral war. And I was reminded of George Carlin's take on oxymorons
and
civil wars. You know, how can you have a civil war? But, you know, it's ridiculous.
It is
in terms of,
I mean, and the U.S. Obama having drones that can kill people anywhere in the world, and literally
including American
people is a loss of moral legitimacy. So there's a crisis of humanitarian inequality, human inequality. There's a humanitarian crisis of the half of the world living on $3 a day, barely getting by, 30,000-40,000 a day dying from starvation and easily curable diseases. That crisis is, you know, 100 9/11s every day.
Yep.
And continues to grow and expand. And unless we address that, it will cause massive chaos, ultimately environmental destruction, and the 1% won't have anywhere to live either.
Exactly.
So
if they don't care. It's like an addiction. Dr. Parenti described it as being the worst addiction in this country. It's not drugs.
It is pathological.
Wealth.
Achieving great wealth and wanting to have great power is a sickness. That can only be countered by systems of democracy and due process. And
accountability.
And accountability, yeah.
You know, we see all the time, was the banks just fined, I think, $5 billion, which is a drop in the bucket for them. But, you know, there were the two-tiered level
nobody
of
goes
justice.
To jail.
Yeah, nobody goes to jail.
Right.
But you know, we go to jail. We go to jail left and right.
Right.
We have the largest prison industrial complex in the world, I think.
Correct.
Could you please give us a brief history of how our corporate news got to where it is today?
Well, newspapers and media inside of capitalism, and this is kind of like a McChesney history lesson, were before the Civil War, there were a massive numbers and mostly not profit making, mostly supported by community groups and political parties and various organizations and churches and all kinds of things. And any given city could have 20, 30 daily newspapers. After commercialization, after media became, or particularly newspapers to start with, and then of course radio and television eventually, became profit-making, where they were selling advertising in support of capital to people to go buy things, that the support of media became advertising-based. And when that happens, then that you're in service to people who are paying for the advertising, which would be the capitalist class.
Right,
that
exactly.
Privatizes newspapers. And then newspapers, of course, can be owned by people who have political agendas. And one, the biggest political agenda is protecting capitalism. But, you know, 100 years ago, or certainly for the Spanish-American War, you know, our corporate media was pushing and needing that capital needed to have what places to grow. And so declaring war against one of the weaker imperial countries in Europe, Spain, and then taking over their territories in Cuba, Puerto Rico, the Philippines, was one way for the U.S. to start to expand our own empire and our own, you know, colonial capabilities. And we, of course, had declared a long time ago that the American continents were U.S.-led, and we didn't want interference from Europe. So, you know, the idea of the Monroe Doctrine, Manifest Destiny, all the U.S. being the exceptional country, we wanted to control North and South America. That was our areas of influence and growth. We, of course, controlled and expanded across the American continent and committed genocide in the process. And the newspapers were cheering that on. But that
right.
Newspapers, you know, if you had five newspapers in any given city, which was pretty typical 100 years ago, and today you have one or less, or you may have one large regional paper. So the media has consolidated massively. So when Ben Bagdikian first wrote his book, Media Monopoly, back in the 80s, he said there's 50 major media corporations in the United States. And we were all like, oh, my God, that's really not very many. And they could all fit in the cocktail room.
Right.
You know,
and today there are five or six.
Five or six, exactly. So that concentration of media has made this an even bigger problem. And then, of course, Chomsky and Herman came up with their propaganda model of corporate media ideas, which was about 23 years old now. And they were accurate. It was true. I mean, that's what it was about. It was about supporting capitalism, and they wouldn't run stories that offended advertisers, and they tended not to run stories that undermined corporate power and influence in the government. And that today, however, has even reflected to a certain extent in independent media. So a lot of independent media is afraid to run stories that the corporate media criticizes or won't run, for they will be identified as lacking values of journalism, objectivity, or pushing a conspiracy theory.
Right.
So we did study, you know, in the mid last decade, where we looked at all the corporate media and how they covered 9/11 issues, and the very, very objective one. And we looked at independent media, how they covered it. And, you know, whether it was Building 7 or the stock options or the pre, and it was very intermittent. Some did, some didn't. And
right.
Some
no,
actually
no.
were openly, you know, challenged, openly challenged.
There was a time, when the corporate news as a whole, I would say 90% of them, were just in attack mode for anybody who questions 9/11. And they're still doing that today, as we just saw with Shaquille O'Neal. If you're anybody with a voice and you dare to question 9/11, they will come after you like you wouldn't believe. And which, as a result, other people with a voice are afraid to speak
out.
Afraid
to do it, yeah.
And, you know, I don't know. I've given up my whole life for this, and I think that if I can do it, a Joe Schmo schlub can speak out and continue to speak out, then the least they could do is, you know, speak out. And I've said before that if celebrities want to talk about 9/11, they should get together as a group, like 20 or 30 of them, and just make a simple statement that, you know, we support the family's call for a real investigation, and walk away from the podium and don't put forward any theories. Because individually, they're very easy to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
But as a group, it would be a lot harder. So I think, you know, that would have been wonderful if they had done that, but they never did.
Well, I started showing Zero, that movie, 9/11, that came out 2008, in class every semester. And as I found, the students became more willing to look at 9/11 as they were, you know, 10 years old when it happened, or even today, you know, 5 years old when it happened. That group of students are more willing to really consider and look at it historically than people our age.
Right.
That kind of stuck in the fear of addressing that or being labeled in some way.
One of the things that I've focused on is trying to contact teachers to see, you know, what they're teaching kids in their syllabuses about 9/11. And they don't teach them much. I've talked to students.
No, they don't teach them much at all.
They teach them about, you know, the day, who is alleged to have done it. And that's about it. They don't talk about the 9/11 Commission and how ridiculous that was and all that other stuff.
As far as I know, most of them don't talk about it at all.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, or they'll just say, oh, yeah, this happened, it was terrible. And which led me to put together a course called The Sociology of Conspiracies 2 years ago. And we've offered it twice now here at Sonoma State, and it's in our catalog. And this course, it's Sociology 371. 371 is the federal code for conspiracies, by the way. Occasionally my students figure that out. It's a course that looks at the broader aspects. Of course, Lance DeHaven Smith's work on conspiracy theory in America and state crimes against democracy, his work there. And we, of course, have Peter Dale Scott's work on the American Deep State. And then Catherine Olmsted from UC Davis, her work on conspiracy theories and American democracy. And she goes back all the way to World War I and up through 9/11. And we start to see that these conspiracies of various sorts, assassinations, stock market manipulations, bank fraud, happen all the time.
Yep.
And so I have my students read Mark Lane's book, My Last Word, on the murder of John Kennedy. they read William Pepper on his book The Act of State on the murder assassination of Martin Luther King. We'd cover a little bit on Robert Kennedy.
And I have
9/11 and anthrax.
Sorry.
Graham McQueen's book on anthrax, which has a lot of 9/11 in it.
I have the course description right here. It says, a critical analysis of conspiracies in society using power elite and state crimes against society theories applied to modern historical events with cultural, social, psychological, public propaganda, and power perspectives. Topics include political assassinations, election fraud, threats of terrorism, 9/11, and permanent war.
That's it. And we're getting 95% positive feedback.
That's great.
I mean, we're maxing the scales. These students are really saying, this is a really important course, really valuable. I learned more than anything else in college, you know, kind of thing.
Right.
And
absolutely.
Because if you look at these spread out, and you look at the pattern, the sociology of conspiracies, the patterns that are evident, then it makes more sense to understand what Peter Dale Scott is talking about when he talks about the deep state.
Right.
There are elements inside governments and private bureaucracies, businesses, that want to repress democracy and expand their power and profits, and do so illegally. And that's the definition of a conspiracy.
Right. And some people refer to it as a state within a state, or the national security state, which is, I think, Michael Parenti's term for it.
Right.
Anyway, is there anything else you wanted to say about your course?
Well, just that not only do the students really like it, I had zero negativity from other faculty or anywhere else for that matter. And I've not been quiet about it. I've put it out on lists. I've written about it. I say, this is a course we offer. It's in the catalog. I think it's an important course. And nobody's said anything yet. I'm waiting for the hammer to fall or something. But no, I mean, it's not like... And I don't think we could have done it right after 9/11.
Right.
I kind of wish not as well. I mean, and it doesn't. It's not like it's all about 9/11 because it's not. It's all about conspiracies. And then I used one of David Ray Griffin's book last semester, but I didn't do it this time. I used Graham McQueen's book on the anthrax, which he laid out a very clear case that this was government anthrax that was spread around and we were lied to about.
Yeah, there was a story that broke in the last couple of months about one of the investigators in the anthrax investigation suing the FBI for, suppressing evidence that would show to the contrary that it wasn't Bruce Ivins and so forth.
Right, exactly.
So that issue is not resolved by a long shot.
No.
Now, what are some of the variables with regards to how our corporate news outlets decide to run a story or not? Do you know?
Well, there's internal self-censorship. The reporters just know that they shouldn't go in certain areas. But newsrooms will pick stories. And Fox News, of course, we know internally now, they'll pick stories and then tell the reporters how to cover them.
Right.
So it's not like reporters are free to go out and pick up anything that they want to. You know, the idea of an investigative reporter out there running a beat and trying to get something on the mayor doesn't really happen anymore. They're assigned. And so it's editors that are assigning these stories. And most of there isn't that much investigative reporting left, so they're either stories that are coming on over the wire, and most of the newspapers in the country are just running wire service. So they're Associated Press or New York Times, Washington Post, wire services, and they're just literally running these things verbatim. So they can be covered. They're selected by editors, which is actually just the 1,700 dailies in the country. So it's not very, it's just a few thousand people.
Right.
Now, certain stories, like the one, like when the ACLU came out with the evidence and the autopsy reports on civilians who died in U.S. custody in Afghanistan and Iraq in the first 3 years of the war, and they reported that these were people who were in U.S. military prisons and they died, and the autopsy reports showed from U.S. doctors that the cause of death was homicide. They were murdered. Or the conditions of their bodies were so severe, they said they died from heart failure, but they died when they were being tortured to death. And, you know, we had something like 40, 50 autopsies that indicated this. ACLU puts out a press release on this. This is, what, 2006, I think, right in there. And AP picks it up. It goes out to all the dailies in the country. And less than 12 ran it.
That's horrible. Well, yeah. I have an example. I have an example of that. On September 11th, 2006, 9/11 family members Christina Kamenik, Donna Marsh O'Connor, and Michelle Little got together with the makers of the film 9/11 Press for Truth, Kyle Hanson, Paul Thompson, at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., to call for a new investigation. And one news outlet in the entire country covered that. And they were right across the hall from, I think, Thomas Keene and Lee Hamilton, who were giving their own press conference. And,
right.
You know, obviously they got a lot of coverage. But, you know, there are other instances like that. The Jersey Girls calling for a new investigation in February of 2008. Raw Story was the only news outlet to cover that in the entire country.
it raises too many important questions.
Right. Well, and there are so many examples of that with regards to 9/11. It's not even funny.
You're right. I mean, it's absurd. And to have any idea, people will say, "Well, what isn't true about 9/11?" I said, "Well, you got, you know, 5 hours of that you can listen. Because,
exactly.
I mean, it's massive, and you can do some highlights, but."
What I generally try to do is just plant good seeds in
right.
people's minds so that they, you know, they start questioning things on their own. And I try to point them in a good direction. And that's all we can do, unless we have the 5 hours,
mm-hmm.
you know. And do you remember back in the 70s when Dr. Martin Luther King was on the, I think it was the Mike Douglas show, and he had a chance to talk about, you know, his anti-war stance and so on and so forth for an extended period of time.
Mm-hmm.
You would not see that today.
No.
You wouldn't see Cindy Sheehan on the television for the national news for a half an hour, unedited, being able to speak her mind.
Or
you
Noam
know?
Chomsky, for that matter. And,
exactly.
And Noam hasn't done anything on 9/11 and criticized it a bit. But, you know, people have been really calling him a gatekeeper and stuff like that, but he's, I can't go there. And I had a fight with Webster Tarbley about that once because he was criticizing Noam Chomsky. And I said, look, he's covered so much, he's done so much, major intellectual in the world. If he doesn't want to do 9/11, leave him alone. And I think that part of his response is that he does get heckled when he publicly speaks, or did for a long time. I don't think it's going on as much now, from various sources on 9/11. And after a while, you just get defensive. I've not talked
right.
to him about that, so it might be interesting to talk to him about it someday. But
well, Cindy Sheehan had the same experience where she would go and speak at events, and there would be quote 9/11 truthers in the event, and they would almost harass her to the point where she started
yeah,
to hate 9/11 truthers. And it's funny that you mentioned Webster Tarpley, because back in 2007, I believe Webster did something, and he called Cindy a name, And I defended Cindy against Webster, and as a result, you know, Webster got out on a stage in New York City during an anniversary event and alluded to the idea that I might be COINTELPRO. But with regards to Noam Chomsky, he and I have had a discussion about 9/11 in the past, and basically his view is that we've done worse things around the world. Even if it's true, even if the government was involved in some way in the 9/11 attacks, there are worse things going on in the world right now that require our attention.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah, there are, but I don't understand how...
Howard Zinn's in the same position.
I know, but, you know, I'm not asking people like Noam to make it the issue for them. I'm just trying to get them to incorporate the fact that we were lied to about that day. If, you know, you can't, if you can't say that, like, lie, an omission. It's like omitting something, a big truth.
I hear you, and I agree with you, John. I just, it's not on the top of my agenda to criticize Chomsky or anyone else, Chris Hedges.
Oh, no, that's certainly not how we get people on our side.
Right.
But I've tried to reason with a lot of these.
For that matter. Because she, I mean, at least she did have David Ray Griffin on and sort of sabotaged him, but
she never had a family member on. She never had Paul Thompson on. You know, there's a lot of issues that she didn't cover, but she did cover a lot of things. So, you know, a lot of people act as if she didn't cover anything, and that's just not true.
No, she did cover some things.
She had Savelle Edmonds on. She had the Loose Change Boys on.
And she said
debate.
She made
popular
it a debate.
I'm sorry?
She made it a debate.
Yeah, and yeah, she talked about the Israeli art students and the the people that were arrested on the van, I believe. She's had Bob Graham on to talk about Saudi Arabia. So she has covered the issue, but she hasn't covered it to the extent that some of us would like.
Yeah.
Anyway.
No, I totally agree. And when we did the national 10th anniversary shows on Pacifica and all the Pacifica Stoics, it was an all-day event. And Project Censored Show helped make that happen. And we did the three-hour segment in Berkeley. We were still required to make it a debate and not just so that people present. That was the policy that was laid down to us, which we accepted because at least we got it on a national all-day radio show. At least it was on as an agenda item to be talked about. And we thought that was a big victory for us at KPFA. And then all the other Pacifica stations aired their segments as well. So it was, you know, a significant honoring of the 10th anniversary of 9/11, and it was a critical honoring as well.
Right. I think the very first event that I ever went to was hosted by Pacifica Radio on September 11th, 2004 in Washington, D.C., and John Judge, Colleen Raleigh, Savelle Edmonds, Ray McGovern were the panelists. And so on and so forth. Now, this is a pretty easy question. If we had a functioning news, something that had the people's best interests at heart, do you think this would be a different world today?
Of course. Of course it would be.
I don't know why I wrote that. That's such an easy question.
Well, I mean, the more transparency we have about what powerful people are doing, the more likely we can call them on the carpet if they're doing stuff that we don't like. That's why TPP is secret. We're not supposed to know who's involved there. Actually, I did see a list of 600 folks that at least got copies of TPP, implying that they were involved in its presentations and development. We don't know who the negotiators are. The U.S. Trade Organization is, you know, certainly key to that, but and they have staff and that kind of thing. But we don't, you know, who. As an individual, represents the pharmaceutical industry and the TPP that's going to let them, you know, greenwash all their formulas and keep their patent rights. We don't know who that person is, and we should.
Right. How can people tell who to trust and who not to Have you developed a system for this?
You know, Project Censored puts out stories almost daily from one of our 20 to 30 college campuses that are involved with this. And not so much in the summer because campuses aren't in session, but when they're in session, we're posting stories on a regular basis. And these are stories that students have researched in a class, and then a faculty member has reviewed. So they've been vetted. And then we're posting them online. But what's key about this is we're posting the sources, where this is from. So the idea that our validated independent news and the various places from which we get these news stories, we're saying that these are valid places. This is a good place to look at news. And so, yeah, you know, whether it's Common Dreams or Truth Out or any other long global research list of independent news sites, there's quite a bit that's online. It's quite available, and it's certainly not inside of newspapers in America or on news. So we're telling, and students are learning through a critical thinking process involved in all these classes, they're learning that there are places for news that are independent. Project Censored is one of them, but there's many, many others, that you can find out information about literally almost anything, but learn to trust and look for multiple sources and verification. And that's what
right.
we do.
I generally tell people to judge people by the fruits of their labor. If they have
yeah.
a good track record, chances are they're pretty trustworthy. And, you know, another thing that you can do is look at, you know, if a story is reported, how many other outlets are reporting on this story? And always, always go to the source. Like, if there's
right.
documentation that was just released and the news is reporting on it, don't listen to what the news is saying. Go read the documentation itself. Because a lot of times the news just doesn't report on the important stuff. But definitely always try to go to the source. And you can even try contacting individuals.
Mm-hmm.
If you see somebody mentioned in a news report, try contacting them and getting their own account. You know, I've done that several times.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very hard, you know, during the Ukraine, when the whole Ukraine-Russia thing happened, I really came to realize that we don't know exactly what's going on. There are propaganda wars going on right now that are just devastating.
Ukraine
it's very
in some
difficult.
Ways been the biggest, one of the biggest lies going.
I'm sorry, say that
the
again?
The idea that Russia invaded the Ukraine and that
right.
Russia is trying to implement a Cold War agenda of imperial power, it's just lies. It's just completely
yep.
false. We've done a
yep.
number of good stories on that. And but that's part of the degree to which the NATO, U.S. NATO empire is willing to go ahead and lie to create a global power structure. For capital.
Yeah, and, you know, I think there's an unspoken war going on right now with Russia. I don't think that we have great relations with China at the moment. And, you know, do you think, looking back at 9/11, do you think one of the possible reasons for facilitating or allowing or whatever the hell happened on 9/11 was to get in that region? To compete against Russia and China.
Yes.
Do you think that was one of the, you know, reasons?
Well, it's yes. I mean, it's certainly occupying Afghanistan, and then our original underbiting of the Russians' invasion of Afghanistan. Was a challenge. It was meant to be a challenge. Massive mineral resources and wealth in Afghanistan, on top of the oil that was in Iraq. Of course, we're totally involved there. I just did an interview with Nick Turse last week on his new book on Africa, And, you know, saying that the future wars, and the Pentagon is really looking at this, the future wars are going to be in Africa. The war on terrorism is going to make a big shift to go to Africa. It already has. We're already
right.
seeing that, war in Yemen and other places. But it won't just be wars and chaos and balkanization of the various countries in the Middle East. We're going to see that all over Africa as well. That's the agenda. And that's what we need to be fully transparent about and expose in a very big way. The lie about, you know, the terrorists, they're really people resisting, you know, global capital penetration in their homelands. So
well,
you go to this, and we're just beating the shit out of them.
That's one of the things about the Iraq War. If you watched, if you paid attention, first, the people that were fighting against us were called insurgents. Then they started referring to them as terrorists. And
right.
then they were Al-Qaeda in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were told that they chose Iraq as the battlefield, you know, and so on and so forth. And they, you know,
ISIS.
Propaganda.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's ISIS.
Yeah. Well, ISIS has come about... It's a combination of things. Very simply, the anger that we created when we invaded Iraq, when we killed over a million people and displaced millions more, when Blackwater was hunting Iraqis for sport, when we were torturing people at Abu Ghraib, when we used depleted uranium and caused babies to become sick. You know, there's no statute of limitations on the anger these kinds of things create. And then when you have Saudi Arabia, and Qatar and Kuwait sending in rebels into Syria, and we're sending in them intelligence, you know,
mm-hmm.
the so-called rebels. Then we sent them arms. Then we started sending in rebels from Jordan to accompany them. You know, we it's a combination of all these things. We created, you know, we and our allies created ISIS, and that's how essentially it happened. The two things combined. Those in Iraq who hate us and those in Syria that we supported to take down Assad combined.
It's called chaos theory.
Yeah.
You have chaos in the world, and then global capital can literally penetrate anywhere because there's no resistance. It's just tiny little countries that become security zones that could be even privately controlled. By private mercenary companies. We just finished a big study on private mercenary companies. They're the new fascism of the 21st century. A whole lot
right.
different than Italian and German fascism. It's fascism by capitalism using private military companies and the U.S. NATO alliance's military power. To succeed
well,
and intervene with nation states everywhere in the world.
With regards to... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Including Russia and China.
With regards to America, it's not so much in-your-face fascism as it was in Germany. It only becomes that way when you try to, you know, push back like the Occupy people did. Like, we, you know, like I've done civil
yeah.
disobedience and all that stuff. That's when you start to see the fascism. But it's not as in-your-face as it was in Germany. It might be. It could become that. But, you know.
It's not as much a case for white people. It certainly is for people of color and people in the inner cities.
And Muslims now.
Very much so.
Because
well,
of 9/11.
You know, a couple thousand Muslims arrested after 9/11 and detained. They weren't arrested. They were just detained.
Right. I know. But, I mean, I read about stories where people in New York City, somebody pushed someone who looked like a Muslim in front of a subway train and killed them. Just hatred like that is just horrible. Like Pamela Geller and all her propaganda, it's just horrible. And I try to tell people that 9/11 was not a Muslim crime. It was a crime. It wasn't, you know, a Saudi crime, an American crime, an Episcopalian crime. It was a crime. And you don't hold everybody who, you know, if somebody who considered themselves a Muslim was involved in 9/11, that doesn't mean that you hold every single Muslim accountable in the world. Just as, you know, if our supposed Christian nation. If our government does something that we don't like, does that mean we should hate all Christians? You know, that
right,
kind
yeah.
of thing. It's ridiculous.
Of course.
Now, one thing I want to talk about is how certain people help to discredit good work and research. And can you please tell us about your doctoral dissertation?
Well, my dissertation was on the sociology of the San Francisco Bohemian Club. And most of my research work and graduate political work was on power elites, going back to C. Wright Mills. Bill Domhoff was on my dissertation committee. He was a longtime power researcher out of UC Santa Cruz. And I was at UC Davis, so I had a couple of good people there. And so I took a look at, you know, the club as, I call it sociology of the San Francisco Bohemian Club, but it was, you know, a relative advantage, which was kind of a play on words in that people who were members really had, it was an expression of advantage in society, not only in terms of who you know through the club and could be interactive with, but the private men's clubs had served that function for a long period of time, certainly throughout the British Empire, and were a way of allowing elites to commingle and, you know, develop agendas and consensus about various issues and talk things through in private. So the Bohemian Club was one of the premier clubs in San Francisco. But they're unique in that they have a 2,000-acre private redwood forest, old-growth forest, up in Sonoma County, just a few miles from where I live, actually, on the Russian River there. And they meet every year for 2 weeks, 3 weekends and 2 weeks, and camp out. Camp out meaning they have these rustic cabins in the woods and they meet there, and every cabin has a bar, and they party and drink a lot and eat good food, and it's all men, and have various self-entertainment and plays and events and speakers, and, you know, the president of another country could come in, or, you know, high-level official in the State Department or something, give lectures. So it's all very private, very elite. And so I got to visit, and I wrote about them, and they acknowledged that everything I wrote was truthful, but they didn't like my interpretations very well. But but that's the nature of academic research. And I did that 4 years ago, so that's I started that research and then finished it up in 1994, and that's when
now,
I got hired here at Sonoma State.
Have you had problems as the result of Alex Jones going into Bohemian Grove and making his little movie, you know, the cremation of care ceremony and all that stuff? Have you had problems?
I criticized Alex for that.
Right.
And it was a ridiculous expose. And it led to a young man from Texas showing up there with a crossbow and hoping to save children from being killed. I think he's still in jail, but I mean, they weren't even in session when he got there. But it does get kooks enraged, and Alex seems to be good at that. And
well,
it just absolutely wasn't true. When Alex went, he could have walked in the front gate with a BBC reporter, and because at that point, before 9/11, anybody could, but he chose to sneak in through the redwoods and say all this was filmed, you know, and then he filmed the cremation of care ceremony, which is somewhat of a bizarre fraternity ritual.
Oh, absolutely.
But it's certainly not sinister, and it's just weird. I mean, they're burning, you know, big bonfires in front of the statue, this owl statue, and that kind of stuff.
But a lot of men's clubs do weird things.
Yeah,
and, you know,
of course they do.
My father's a mason.
Yeah.
And, you know, they do all, I don't know. He never told me what they did. Don't worry, Masons. But he did say that they do some weird things.
that's what, yeah, private groups do that. I mean, they have ceremonies and it supposedly means something. But, you know, when I saw the cremation of care ceremony, there's 2,000 or 3,000 guys sitting out in the woods there. And it was all very interesting. And, you know, they had fireworks and the high priest, you know, comes forward and he challenges care, and care responds, you can't kill care. And they end up burning up care with all the torches go out. And then, you know, it's marching priests in robes with torches, and it's quite weird. But
right.
It's kind of silly. And you know, there's guys just kind of cracking up about it.
Well,
some people take it seriously because you go there for years and years. You do the same thing every year. But Alex is portraying it as human sacrifice.
Exactly.
And as
a result, you get a lot of, I don't want to say dumb questions, but misguided questions about the Bohemian Grove as a result of what he did.
No,
but,
not so much.
You know, they don't say, did you write about how they burn people in effigy or whatever
I've never really had anybody ask me that. Nobody out here listens to Alex Jones anyway. And maybe if I was in Texas, somebody might ask me that, but it's never happened.
Is it true, though, that they, you know, occasionally go out of the grove to get, you know, prostitutes or whatever?
Well, of course. I mean, if you put 2,000 men with money in one place at one time, of course a certain percentage of them are going to go out and fool around.
Right.
There's no question about that. I mean, that's just money and wealth and men and their egos.
Right. Well, I don't say I condone it, but right.
No,
I hear you.
I mean, that's just happens at every, you know, convention and major football game or whatever. It's, you know, that's just part of the way of the world. So, but yeah, women do come in to Sonoma County, and there are private homes that are used for entertaining the men. And there was a group of women busted about 10 years before I did my research work by the sheriff here.
I think
but,
if the
I mean,
United States,
I mean, the cops are just looking the other way.
I think if the United States knew about, you know, things that go on, and they'd be shocked. But again, you know, your work was very credible, and Alex's was not, and I think that was the point. And
that,
you know,
yeah, that's still a point. Critical of him. I mean, he's a shock jock, and
right.
What motivates him? Whether he really does work for Stratford or did, you know, I don't know for sure, but.
Whether he does or doesn't, it, you know, the effect is the same.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. I mean, he's like Jonathan Kay. You know, he makes outlandish statements and writes, you know, a book about 9/11 and criticizing anybody that is a truther or something like that. I mean, there's people out there that do that. Whether or not they're paid or motivated to do that, they're certainly encouraged and maybe supported in some way.
I had him on as a guest and challenged him and did my best to make, you know, people realize that this is a legitimate issue.
Yeah.
And it's funny because one of the things that he did is he essentially agreed with almost everything I said.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's the technique they're doing now, as opposed to saying everything you say is wrong. There's nothing to what any 9/11 truther has to say. He now, you know, agreed with a lot of what we said, or what I say anyway.
Yeah.
Now, what do you recommend people do to get their news? I think we kind of went over this.
Well, certainly not waste any time watching TV news unless you want to know what the weather is. And find independent news sources that you like and trust and will go to on a regular basis. I think Christian Science Monitor is pretty darn good, their website. I certainly recommend and encourage people to listen to RT, Russia Today, for good critical analysis. That's national stuff. There's, you know, all the Pacifica stations are, for the most part, giving us information you're not getting on corporate media. You can find a Pacifica station in your area. That's pretty good to do.
Right. What I generally did is that every morning, and I did this for a decade, is I would go to Google News and type in Israel and everything coming up having to do with Israel. And I would go through them all and pick out the stories I thought were important. Then I would type in Russia or 9/11, each individual subject, and I would search all the news outlets and post everything that I could find that I thought was important. But that's a lot of work, and I've stopped doing
a lot of
that.
Work. Yeah, I know. I get 200 emails a day on various news things.
Right.
And some days I'll spend, you know, a lot of time looking at stuff, and other days I just can't.
It's hard to do, but, you know, it's a requirement, unfortunately, because we don't have a corporate news media that works. So we have to do what we have to do to try our best to inform the public.
Yeah, and most people don't have the time or the availability or that, and so, you know, that's why I think groups like Project Censored and various other ones that help consolidate the news, Electronic Epitata, or just some that can give you really good sources and information about what's happening.
Is there anything that you'd like to promote? Like your show with Mickey?
Well, our show with Mickey originates on Fridays at 1 o'clock at KPFA in Berkeley. And then of course it's online immediately at kpfa.org, and then within 24 hours it's pretty much up on the Project Censored website. So all of our radio shows are there. I think, yeah, I'd like to promote the Project Censored website. I mean, you could take any topic, whether it's 9/11 or Israel or Russia or anything else, depleted uranium, torture, you know, TPP, you know, health policies, environment, and use those words and search inside of Project Censored, you get a ton of information from various independent sources. And that, I mean, that's, it's a great place to do student research projects. It's a really in-depth website with information covering our 40 years of research, 39 years officially.
Yes, I highly recommend Project Censored. Now, I have a question, and I kind of have a bet with Mickey, not a bet, but do you remember the first time that I met you?
No.
You don't? Oh, well, he said
don't
you would.
Don't remind me.
Okay. The June 2006 conference in Chicago.
It was in Chicago. Okay.
You were sitting in the lobby, and I sat down next to you, and I said, "Hey, Peter." We had a little talk.
Okay. I'm sorry. I don't remember that in particular, but yes, I knew you were there, and I think you told me that once before.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, that was the first time we ever met. But I don't think I've seen you since.
Yeah, I don't think we have. We haven't been in the same room, at least, since.
No.
You weren't in D.C.?
I was there for the Truth Emergency Convergence, which was, I think, the day before.
Okay.
Where we were at Lafayette Park and everybody was talking.
I was there. I spoke.
Yeah, you spoke. A lot of people spoke. Paul Thompson,
okay.
Jenna Orkin.
Yeah. So you were there then,
and
but you didn't come
I
up
didn't,
to say hi.
I'm sorry, I didn't come up to say hi that time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, the first time I met you was in June 2006.
Okay.
Anyway, Peter, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to come on today.
Well, it's been fun talking. We're kind of ad-libbing here and thinking about where we're going and what's happening. And
yep. Where are we going indeed?
A big part of all of that has been
right.
In my life since it happened. And it's part of, you know, everything that I'm doing now in conspiracies and looking at the you know, the transnational class at the highest levels.
Yep. And I appreciate the work that you're doing. And again, I want to thank you for coming on today.
Okay.
And again, I want to thank Mickey for making this happen.
Yeah, it was great.
All right. Have a good day there, Peter.
Okay. Thanks a lot. What do you do with this? How does it end up getting out?
I put it on iTunes and I put it on my YouTube channel, and it shows up on Cindy Feehan's Soapbox as well.
Oh, great.
All right.
All right, John, thanks.
All right, have a good day.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.